Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.
Wow.
Yeah.
Southern California.
Southern California.
What a place to live.
And smoke.
That's right.
And that's flames. Right. And when they say it's flaming in Hollywood, I guess it really is. Right?
Well, I think clearly there's a lot going on in the southern part of the state, but obviously the northern part of the state, too, has it even worse. So as we sit here and get a chance to talk about the arts today, we should be mindful of that and how many people are dealing with some tough stuff up there.
But the one thing that I do want to say with regards to the fires in California and the ridiculous comments the president has been making out of Washington is that he should be congratulating the firefighters and the system out here for taking care of it as best they can under the conditions. But, of course, it goes the other way. But I wanted to recognize them and just say thank you to, on behalf of someone such as yourself, who I love and adore your family and you, and you are affected by this, and that makes me crazy.
Very nice of you to say, although we're okay, everything's fine, thank you so much. And we got so many listeners and people checking in on us, offering us beds. What I didn't want to tell them is you will no longer be my friend if my children stay at your house. I can guarantee it. You will kick us out and you will cut off all contact. I joke, but my kids have been amazing. They've been wonderful through this. We talked about the emotional stuff and they said, well, we're just lucky that we're all together. And it seems like everybody has a fairly good attitude about the danger that was, you know, that was obviously present. In the end, for almost all of Malibu, it was mostly just property damage. And we can come back from that. Everything's okay. So that sort of thing. And the thing that kept running through my head, other than the Johnny Cash song Ring of Fire, was that my grandfather always used to say, no matter how hard something is that you think you're going through, somebody else has been through something harder and come out better than you are. So be sure that you get better by this. Be sure that you improve. Be sure that you can grow, because all it is a chance to be stronger after this, which I thought was a good way to look at life and was now put to the test in a massive way. So well, we're okay. And thank you for everybody who checked in with us.
And you know what today is? National Kindness Day.
That's a good thing. Let's have a little more kindness on this planet.
That's what it is.
Well, and in fact, interesting that you know there is a presidential connection here, because the California economy and the difficulties of California are something that the show that we're talking about today is focusing on a little bit. A governor of California who became president, Ronald Reagan, and his love affair with his wife Nancy Davis, now Nancy Reagan, who I think everybody now has known. So many different documentaries have been produced about them, certainly focusing on the Cold War with a lot of the anniversaries that have come up. But I don't think everybody knows about the love story behind the political powerhouse that came of it. So we should go ahead and say a quick hello to the two amazing guests that we have here with us today. Michael, as you said, it is November 15th edition of State of the Arts, and we do have a great show for our listeners.
We do indeed, Andrew. And with us are the stars of In a Booth at Chasen's, on stage now through November 25th at the El Portal Theater, Debbie Reynolds Main Stage Theater. We're so happy to have them here. Kelly Dorney and Brent Schindel.
That's right, that's right.
Oh, thank you so much.
Brent and Kelly, so good to see you both. You are both L.A. theater royalty. There's no doubt about that. Your credits are known far
my
and
lady,
wide.
Sir. Huzzah.
One of the things that I think is most interesting is that this show is something that was conceived to basically focus on something that most people don't know about Ronald Reagan, right? That love affair. What's that been like to learn about?
It was news to us, I think, because this is sort of the prequel. This is the chapter before the chapters that people are more familiar with. This is when they first met and began this love affair. But I will say that people did say over and over to me, they did have a real love affair. Hmm. My own parents said that. They said, oh, you're doing this new premiere show about the Reagans in their infancy, of their relationship, basically.
Wow.
And they said, it just seemed like they had a real love affair. And I've heard that said over and over and over again, that people did have this idea, and it wasn't just sort of Hollywood propaganda.
Yeah.
And I think that was played out as he became more and more in the public eye, as he rose politically in the governorship and eventually the presidency, that you could see that they truly adored each other and that they stood by each other, and he would not have been the man he was if she had not been by his side.
And that certainly continued through their later years when he was, still president, and also, his memory was going.
And you met President Reagan, didn't you?
I met both of them.
Yeah.
I hosted both of them at the forum in Los Angeles. They came to, I was handling the Scott Hamilton, the Olympic champion, and his touring show, Stars on Ice, and we were getting ready to open there, with all the major Olympic champions. And Ronald was the one that wanted to come and see them, and so we, had to close the building and security and everything, and two people, Nancy and Ronald, in the audience.
Wow.
They, put a mini show together and for them.
Wow.
And it was pretty interesting, and he was terribly sweet, and she was very, very right by his side, and would, if he was asking something that didn't sound quite right or answering something that didn't sound quite right, she would make a very low whisper in his ear, and he would stop and correct it and say that.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
Wow.
It was charming. A
couple great communicators there.
Yeah,
wow,
absolutely.
That's impressive. Impressive.
Absolutely.
Well, the name of the show is In a Booth at Chasen's, and it's going up at the El Portal Theater, opened on the 9th of November and runs all the way through the 25th. So lots of chances to get out and see the show. And obviously, it's a subject matter that I think right now is kind of cool to talk about behind the political curtain and how people become who they are and what happens afterwards. I think that's a fun thing to talk about, certainly when politics is something that we would rather all stay away from at any way in our life that we possibly can at this stage of life. So one of the things we're going to dig into a little bit is that love story. I want to talk more about that. But before we do that, Michael, we should certainly take some time, pay some bills, and thank our magnificent sponsors, shouldn't we?
We should. We should. We'd like to thank, ladies and gentlemen, Princess Cruises for coming on board as presenting sponsors for State of the Arts during 2018. A pioneer in excellence on the high seas for meaningful travelers who seek enriching experiences, only Princess Cruises offers cruise vacations to help you come back new. Provide fresh perspectives by connecting you with nature, cultures, and loved ones in a new way.
One of the best-known names in cruising, Princess Cruises first set sail in 1965 with a single ship cruising to Mexico. Today, the line has grown to become the third largest cruise line in the world, renowned for innovative ships, an array of onboard options including extravagant entertainment, and an environment of exceptional customer service. A recognized leader in worldwide cruising, Princess carries approximately 1.7 million guests each year to more than 360 destinations worldwide aboard a fleet of 17 modern vessels.
Experience the next wave in vacation travel. At the end of each month from September to August, one lucky winner will win a cruise for two in a balcony stateroom on board one of the new Ocean Medallion class ships. Make sure to enter every month for your chance to win, and you do that by coming to the LA Talk Radio Network site on the internet, and then you go, you click on Channel 2, and you find State of the Arts, our page. There is a beautiful logo for Princess Cruises. You click on that, and that will register you as many times as you want to do that. It will register you that for you to be possibly a winner of a prize valued at $5,000.
You know, that sounds like a pretty good deal.
Are we
eligible? Are you and I eligible?
We are not.
Are we eligible?
I'm out of here. You are eligible. In fact, you
are.
And all your family members. So I hope you win that and then take me as your guest, because I'm telling you that is an amazing prize. And we may need it here shortly. So. I'd like to be in the middle of water right now. I'll tell you that. We'd also, of course, like to acknowledge PerformingArtsLive.com, one of the internet's most prominent listing sources for the live arts here in Southern California. We're grateful to Performing Arts Live for lending their support to State of the Arts.
Indeed.
Our guests are giving them a round of applause. They have a world-renowned reputation, PerformingArtsLive.com. I think every show I do in L.A. gets listed on there. It's amazing at how comprehensive they are. And I mean, it really is the go-to spot for finding out what's going on in
it
L.A.
Is. Yeah. So, Andrew, we haven't seen each other, but we've talked about, at least for a week, but we've talked certainly with texting and whatnot. But silly question for me to ask if you had a chance to go out and see any theater, because you clearly didn't.
Theater, but I had an art opening the day following.
Did
so
you really?
In fact, I left. This is not to start the show off on an even darker note, but I left here to head up to see my friend whose daughter was killed in the Borderline shooting. And of course, one of the things we should say is that's been obscured with all the devastation. But the idea that things could always be worse, I cannot imagine a worse tragedy than that. And the way that family is handling it, Elena's voice is a hashtag that's going around right now, and the Housleys are truly focusing on trying to say the life is what matters, even if it was only 18 years. So, but when I got up to Thousand Oaks, they turned me around at Westlake mm-hmm. and said, and the flames were encroaching onto the freeway. And so I started through Canaan thinking, I'm so glad I live in Malibu and not Westlake. And then I woke up the next morning and they said, get out of here. You know, you got to go. Wow. And I stayed until the flames jumped PCH. I sent the family out early. But once the flames jumped PCH, I've been there for 15, 17 years now in different yeah. locations and never seen that. So it was definitely a change. But I did. I had an art opening that night. I went down to the Balboa Peninsula and saw a friend's show with the children in tow. And we got to observe that. And it was actually amazing. And it was amazing to see just how much art in Los Angeles is being produced, how many different perspectives mm-hmm. there are, and how many really cool people there are out there creating beautiful art.
Well, I, on the other hand, went to the opening of A Bronx Tale.
And how was it?
At the Santagis Theater. I want to tell you something. At the beginning, are you familiar with the show or know anything about it?
I've seen the movie.
Yeah. And he was there. Jazz.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool. Yeah. Very cool.
And this is what the beginning of it, it feels from the moment it begins. There's a street lamp that comes flying down and somebody's standing next to it. And it looks like Jersey Boys all of a sudden.
Wow.
Right.
And it feels like Jersey Boys all of a sudden.
Wow.
And then it feels like Jersey Boys meets Grease. And then Grease meets, you know, another show. It's a composite of a lot of things. But it moves beyond that.
Yeah.
That was really just the opening number. And I thought the score and the orchestrations of this show was amazing.
I'm so glad to hear that.
And the talent was amazing. And when it was all said and done, it was one of the best experiences in the theater, most uplifting experiences in the theater.
Ladies and gentlemen, breaking news here on State of the Art. Yeah. Michael has seen just about every piece that's ever gone up in Los Angeles proper
sure
and around the
that.
World, certainly so many at the Fantagius, and you feel this is one of their best
yeah.
offerings ever.
Well, that I mean, as far as that type of a show.
Wow,
I mean,
cool.
From you leaving feeling good and actually remembering some of the music. Which
that's
is
an endorsement that rings true, no doubt about it. Obviously, it is such friendly material. It's material that you want to root for people and you leave feeling so wonderful. The score is amazing. So I'm glad to hear the performance was that good. That's great.
Very, very good.
How long is it running? Do you know?
Here through November 25th.
So at the Hollywood Pantages, get out there, get your tickets to see the Bronx. Is it A Bronx Tale or The Bronx Tale?
A Bronx Tale.
A Bronx Tale. So get a chance to see that. That's
and then
a ringing
it heads up to San Francisco. I think it opened the tour here in Los Angeles and then goes to San Fran.
Awesome. Well, I love to hear that just because the Pantages does such great work anyways. But to have that show there, and that's a cool time for that and a nice way to get out of the house and go see something to enjoy.
Yeah.
Well, that is one of many, many shows going on here in the Southland. And our guests here today are going to tell us about another great one. We want to go ahead and bring them in. Our first guest was recently in The World Goes Round with Reprise 2.0 and Annie at the Hollywood Bowl. I can see them guessing on which one we're introducing first. They're playing a game over there.
The sun will come out. Oh, it wasn't me.
Other area credits include Nice Work If You Can Get It and Carousel at Musical Theater West, Lend Me a Tenor and First Date with McCoy Rigby, Oklahoma at 3D Theatricals, Superhuman with Center Theater Group, Killer Barbie.
And Serial Killer Barbie.
Serial Killer Barbie. I didn't write that. He did. And Adam and Eve and Steve, which I did see at the NoHo Arts Center, which was hilarious. And Nonsense with Crown City Theater.
She has toured the country with Fancy Nancy and Click Clack Moo with TheaterWorks USA. While living in London, she performed in the PBS concert special A Tale of Two Cities and the workshop of Love Never Dies. She can be heard on both cast albums.
She's here today, however, to tell us about her current starring role as Nancy Reagan at the El Portal Theater in A Booth at Chasen's. Please welcome the beautiful and most talented Kelly Dorney.
All right. I'm applauding, too.
That's not all Brent, though. There were other people
there
too.
People
a lot of people.
I'm
you were just
bleeding.
The loudest.
I always bring the crowd to applaud for me.
Kelly, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Tell us about how you got involved with the show and what your experience has been like.
Well, I was really lucky to kind of get on a kind of a ground floor operation with them. They had a couple readings of the musical in our illustrious producer and composer's apartment, Al Kasha, I'm saying that right, yes?
Al Kasha.
Kasha. Yep. Okay, cool. Good. I change it up, but just to see which one I feel like that day is. Sounds horrible. Al Kasha.
What do you change it up to?
Kasha. I like to give it a little variety.
It's like potato.
Exactly. He's so lovely. And his lovely wife, Seal. Anyway, they're gorgeous people. And they had readings in their beautiful place. And we were just giving them a chance to hear this script out loud. Wow. No music, just a chance to see what works. Because you can write something on down, but unless you have real people saying it out loud, you really don't know how it's coming across. So I did that twice, and then had my audition and was lucky enough to be cast as Nancy Davis.
Wow.
So
amazing.
My parents were thrilled.
Well,
were they?
You know, I think that I told you on opening night, I said it was perfectly cast. There couldn't be two, look at them. There could not be two people more well-suited for these
right.
roles. And Kelly is she's dark-haired in the show, as is Brent. But the engagement of your skills to capture the essence of both of those characters is just on the money.
Yeah.
Totally on the money.
Well, Reagan's obviously passed away. Ronald Reagan passed away, obviously, a few years ago and is obviously looking down. But don't you think as an actor somewhere he's going, they couldn't call me to do the part? Because that's what I would be thinking. I would just be going, seriously?
Yeah.
Nancy, too.
That's probably true. Yeah. You're probably right. Yeah.
Nancy was an actress, too.
That's true. That's
yeah.
true. No
and
doubt.
I think people don't, as we said before we went on the air, most people don't know about that very early part of their
mm-hmm.
life.
Right.
Where they courted for, what, 2 years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Over 2 years.
A long time, wow.
Mm-hmm.
And the strength of Nancy Reagan, as even at that you know time of mm-hmm. her life,
right.
when she was so young, and you saw that come out, and, you know, her taking the lead and being challenging and leaving the date that they had in the booth at Chasen's, which was a blind date,
yeah.
and deciding it wasn't for her, and she wanted to make a statement about it, so she did it, just left.
Amazing.
Right?
Amazing.
Well, there's also some of the research I've done, there's talk of Nancy kind of floating the idea to Ronald towards the end of those 2 years, being like, well, I might just go back to New York and do theater.
Wow.
See you later,
right.
and mm-hmm. see if that could, you know, push
how different
him.
The world would have been.
Yeah, very different, yes. Yeah. See if that could have pushed him into making that jump, making yeah. the leap.
So, Kelly, you just said that as being part of your process, right? You did a lot of research.
Mm-hmm.
And did you have the assistance of the producers and the writers in giving you information?
I mean, they are very knowledgeable, and they would offer up any kind of information when we were in rehearsals, and they're full of stories. Obviously, Sam Bennett, who wrote the script, did tons of research on the two of them. I got most of my research from Audible. I'm a big fan of Audible. When you're in your car as much as you are in Southern California, it's the best way for
That's
me to
true.
Just research. So I listened to a couple of different books about them and
did
watched
you ever
interviews.
Run across Peggy Grand's book on Reagan?
What was it titled?
You know, it's interesting. I have to look up the title real quick, but it was an interesting piece. The President Will See You Now is what it was called.
Oh, no.
Oh,
I
met her at the opening.
So Peggy's amazing. She's a dear friend of ours' daughter, and she was the one who talked about that White House as just being such an interesting place to be. So many pivotal things going on
right.
around the world. And Peggy had some really – her kids swam with Ronald Reagan in his pool kind of thing. That's how close they were.
Wow.
She planned his funeral and all that. And it was just interesting to see how much behind-the-scenes information she got on the people
mm-hmm.
rather than the office, which I thought was fascinating.
His assistant for like the last 10 years? Is
I
that
think
who
so.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
She
yeah.
was really nice. She
mm-hmm.
she was a fan of yours, Brent. She was like, oh, he was just like Mom.
Yeah. Which is high praise. I mean, the people that knew the man
praise.
To say that, that's
right.
what more can you ask for?
Well, her mother speaks so highly of her. Her mother's a former professor of mine and a great, great friend. In fact, she's affected by the fires right now as well, so dealing with some of that. But my kids always go over to their house for Halloween, and it's so funny to see how much she loves Peggy and the work that she did, and certainly the civic leadership that she showed planning the funeral and trying to make sure everybody was accounted for and everybody
right.
had what they needed. So
right.
tell me a little bit about what you learned about Nancy that you might not have known from what everybody else knows from history.
Well, Nancy was very ambitious as an actress. Her mother was an actress. She was a Broadway star touring. And so she kind of took on this, like, well, I'm going to do it too, and I'm going to kind of blaze my own trail, right, and go to Hollywood. She started out in New York. She was even on Broadway. And then she made a change. She was like, nope, I'm going to do my own thing. And so she went to, and even she says in the show, I might not be the most talented actress, but I know how to play the game. I'm here. I'm going to keep moving up the ladder because I know what needs to be done.
Yeah.
And so there's definitely ambition there, which I think doesn't come as much of a surprise to people that knew Nancy, but I think the insecurity as well, of being an actress with an actress mother who was successful, you know, there's a lot of layers there.
Yeah.
And she,
wow,
she kind of got a bad rap sometimes when they were in the White House. And I think the thing that is the most important is that she was human, and that as she says, she's a natural, you know, classic Cancer. She takes criticism very to heart, and
astrology plays a big role.
Really,
she wanted people
to Ronald's chagrin.
Yeah, she wanted to be her own woman, and I think that's incredibly commendable.
No
and
doubt,
was one of the, you know, trailblazers in that regard.
Right.
Melania Trump, are you listening to this?
And she,
it can be done.
And she took into office. She wanted to, you know, have incentives that were hers alone. I mean, people now can say what they want about the war on drugs and how she started, but there were definitely kids that were positively impacted by her work in that.
Right.
And who knows where we would be now if that hadn't happened.
And I think most people believe the intention was certainly well meant on all fronts.
Yeah.
You know, but conversely, with his background at that young age, I didn't realize that he was such a player.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Yeah.
Well, Nancy, too.
We kind of got this vision of Hollywood as a place where it was pretty freewheeling, especially
for
that's
what it was.
40s and 50s,
right,
when we think of it being so buttoned down. At least in the Hollywood circles, everybody was kind of...
There was no Twitter back then.
Everybody.
We didn't see any of it, but it was going on. Yeah,
right.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
It wasn't
that's
quite
funny.
as obvious as it is these days, but it was happening.
Yeah,
there's
a whole number we sing where we're kind of railing against the paparazzi and the tabloid press,
mm-hmm,
which, boy, if they'd only known where that was going to go.
That's so true, true.
But
it must have felt so intrusive then.
It must
have felt like, well, this doesn't happen anywhere else. And now you compare it today, and you think, boy, what a mild existence they had.
Yeah. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. All the music's original, correct?
It's all original.
Amazing. And is it period style? Does it feel like a 1940s? 50s, 60s, 70s?
In a few places.
Sometimes.
In a few places.
Not everywhere.
You know what the music is and was for me? It was very melodic, and I thought very well written for that time period.
Hmm.
Good.
The opening number, I think, was one of my favorite things.
Mm-hmm.
And
good.
Then your number, It's You.
It You? Is
It
Me?
You?
Is It We?
Yeah.
That's Kelly's song.
Yeah. So great.
Mm-hmm.
So great.
It kind of picks up the styles of where we are in that moment. Like the song we were just referring to about the paparazzi has a bit of like a
old vaudevillian
sense to it. And then I sing a song about Red, which is really jazzy. It feels like Fever.
Right.
And then you have this...
I sing a song called A Club of Two,
mm-hmm,
which has a very kind of Latin, mm-hmm, 50s kind of feel to it.
Very cool.
And
very
then he has
cool.
Better Angels, which is this patriotic number.
Oh, kind of a straight ahead.
Yeah. And then your big number at the end has a very light Burt Bacharach feel. Not Burt Bacharach,
but a kind of a more contemporary pop Broadway kind of sound, like Alan Menken might write.
Wow.
Alan, are you listening to this?
We have him here today, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah.
Can you tell me a little bit about what time period the piece covers?
1949 to 1952.
So a short time period, just when they met and started dating and eventually got married.
It is the courtship, basically, the first meeting to...
When
so for every Democrat out there who's going, I'm not going to see a play about a Republican,
yeah,
they don't have to worry about that. You don't have to go deal with politics in the show. Okay,
no.
Good.
Reagan was a Democrat, pretty much.
Right, you know, that's funny, too.
Maybe even in this time period, he is still probably
a
registered Democrat.
He was,
and he's the head of the Screen Actors Guild. He's
so
the president of SAG, so he's a union guy.
That's interesting, too, and people don't talk about that, but really, was his work at the Actors Guild was his introduction to politics. It was right. how he learned how exactly. to handle, and that was during HUAC, that was during a lot of different exactly. things that were going on. He learned to manage people. So right. this is not a political piece, which I think is important to get out there because it's a love story, and this is a love exactly. story that leaves you feeling
and
good.
And you know what? To that, it ends at exactly the place that it should end.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
And the audience doesn't realize for a moment that it isn't going into an intermission and Act Two will be coming up.
Right.
Very smart thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. So,
because you are like so engaged at that point that if you left and came back to something that was going to be political, then mm-hmm. it wouldn't make sense. Yeah. Right?
Interesting. Yeah. Right. Well, I think that's a great thing to hear, though, just because it is, it does kind of live above the level that we all get stuck in, right. which is the political this, the political that. Even political people are still people.
You yeah. know,
they
right.
have stories. Let's find out those stories. Let's understand where people are coming from. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, it reminds you that even politicians have hearts and fall in love.
Even politicians right. are people. That's the name of my next solo show. Even politicians are people.
Really.
That's fantastic.
Is that the real Booth on stage, or was the real Booth in the lobby of the theater?
Real Booth was in the lobby.
How cool.
So cool. Right.
And is that preserved by the Reagan Library?
That one was from, there was a couple that donated that booth.
How cool.
To the production?
To the production. Oh, and yeah. it's being auctioned off, I believe.
Oh, maybe so.
I might just also yeah. be making that
right.
up.
Right. People are going to go in there and start bidding, and they're going, no, we don't want
to
sell it.
To do that.
Kelly said it was okay.
Yeah, it's on sale.
Walking out with it with a U-Haul.
There's 20 bucks.
My kids have gotten very much in the habit of searching for change whenever we go out now, so they would be there searching for change to make the bid, yes.
1932.
Andrew, the first thing you see when you walk into the lobby,
cool.
they have it set up, and it's beautiful.
The actual booth where they were sitting at Chase & Seth's,
so
amazing.
Kelly,
and there's
yes.
another.
Amazing.
I'm not taking credit.
There's also a booth at the Reagan Library, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I've heard that.
Wow. Yeah.
You know? Very cool.
And the one that's on the stage has been meticulously mm-hmm. researched by Andy Walmsley, our scenic designer.
Interesting.
And he went there and had lunch at the Bristol Farms that's in the right. actual location where Chasen's was, and they preserved a number of the booths there, and he sat and had lunch and then got his measuring tape out and sort of surreptitiously was making all his measurements.
Mm-hmm. That's
so
great.
It's a pretty accurate representation.
Scenically, it is impeccable and with
yeah,
the
Andy did
utmost
some terrific work.
Of class.
Cool. Jared Sagg's lighting is tremendous. We were seeing some production photographs now and being like, oh, wow,
yes,
this is what
imagery
we're walking around in. Because we're in it. We don't
wow.
see it, but, yeah. but, you know, to see it from...
The projections are really
very
beautiful.
Cool.
Right.
And
it's awesome.
Did you know Chasen's, the restaurant?
No, in fact, I had to look it up for this broadcast.
Either of you ever been
no.
there?
No.
No.
I was there. But, you know, Rosemary Clooney, of course.
Of course.
My mentor, that's where we would go.
Wow.
You know?
Perfect.
Yeah, and it's true.
Rosemary Clooney would be a perfect Chasen's
Yeah, that's
denizen.
Probably true. That's probably
yeah.
true.
It was one of her favorite places, like the Daisy nightclub, if you remember that in Beverly Hills. Or
you sure she wasn't
it.
Just going there hoping to meet Ronald Reagan?
Yeah.
She wasn't just sitting in the booth waiting?
She was single during that time period. But, yeah, no, it was everything that was cracked up to be. And the chili was truly the best chili in the world.
Right.
That's why people
says that.
Went there.
Yeah.
Chili's not what I think of as a date food.
I know.
I'm going to eat some chili.
Yeah.
That's right.
For
yeah.
so many reasons. One, because
don't
I would
be
spill
around.
It down the front of me and just walk out going, yeah, that didn't work out.
Yeah.
So many things could have been killed.
How
if
debonair
you
can you look in that situation?
Right. Right. That's so true. So true. Well, that is an amazing thing. And this show sounds great. We should go ahead and give the information out real quick. And we'll obviously do this again here before the show is over. The venue is the beautiful El Portal Theater, the Debbie Reynolds main stage, across from one of our favorite places to go grab a vanilla Manhattan at the Federal Bar and Grill. This is on 5269 Lancashire. It's in North Hollywood. If you haven't been there, it's a former movie... theater.
Palace, yeah. 1926.
And interesting, it was Marilyn Monroe saw shows there, and so many people went to go see theater shows there. It was going to be torn down for a while, and they eventually converted it to other things, and then finally to a playhouse, which I think is fantastic. Opened up on November 9th and is running all the way through November 25th.
And you know that Marilyn Monroe they have a second theater there.
They do.
And they named it, on the 50th anniversary of her death, they renamed the Forum Theater, which is a 99-seat theater.
For Marilyn Monroe.
In her honor, because she went to school at the elementary school right behind the theater.
Wow.
Which is still there.
Well, this is obviously a show
that?
We here highly
yeah,
recommend. In a Booth at Chasen's is the name of the show, and the website's very easy. It's In a Booth at Chasen's. Chasen's is spelled Chasens. And you can zip over there and get tickets. They start as low as $29.
And you can also call for tickets, 818-508-4200. And when, what did you just say? The tickets started at $29, mm-hmm. right?
That's right.
Yeah. And it's a beautiful space. It's one of our great premier theaters here in Los Angeles, mid-size houses. It seats a little over 400, I think. And
yeah, it's a great size.
Yeah, it is. It's just perfect. Yeah. You're engaged so nicely with the audience. From the stage, you must feel that, right?
Yeah.
It doesn't look like there's a bad seat in the house.
No, there's not. Isn't. That's true. That's right. true. And it does have that very period feel, which I'm sure is very nice for this show.
Yeah,
as well.
Suits the show very well.
Frames and, of course, after you're there, you can it's easy parking, too, which is great. And then you can easily jump across and go to the Federal, grab some food, maybe see some entertainment there as well, if you wish. We should go ahead and do a live arts calendar. But before we do that, I want to take just a second and thank Carrie Ann Francis Photography, cafrancesphoto.com. Francis is spelled F-R-A-N-C-E-S. She came by and took some great shots of Michael and I, but more than anything, she just does the best headshots in Los Angeles. Carrie Ann Francis, if actors are out there looking, certainly if you want to be photographed for headshots, but she does band shots, she does production stills, all that kind of stuff. She's one of our favorites and truly a great, great artist in her own right, a director too, which I think always makes a great photographer.
And a very nice person.
Yeah, that's true. So many nice people out there that don't get noticed because they're just nice. And to find somebody nice and talented and productive who's willing to out there and fight LA all the time, it's such a breath of fresh air to shoot with somebody like that. They relax you. You know, so you end up having a great, great shoot with her. So I think as we move on to page 5, we can go ahead and page 6, I should say, and we'll dig in on our live arts calendar.
Yes.
Hudson Theaters presents a limited engagement of Bench, a homeless love story. Mined from the true stories of people in the New York neighborhood where he lived, writer-activist Robert Galinsky. Is it Galinsky?
Galinsky.
Yeah, I guess it's Galinsky. G-A-L-I-N-S-K-Y presents a unique perspective of life in the streets through 5 homeless characters whose lives have become forever intertwined.
Stage Raw calls this remarkable show a top 10 because of Galinsky's exuberance. That's Galinsky's.
Right. And Galinsky's exuberance. Wait, what happened
Did
there?
Not buy your teeth through the mail.
That's right.
Galinsky's exuberance and skill. His characters, their energy, resilience, resourcefulness, and determination are their saving grace as they struggle to survive and pursue some kind of redemption.
The Bench, a homeless love story, is on stage now through December 13th at the Hudson Main Stage Theater.
For tickets or more information, call 323-960-7822 or visit hudsontheater.com.
And again, obviously, performingartslive.com has that and many other listings for you to go check out.
Yes.
No doubt about it. Hey, should we introduce this good-looking guy sitting to your left there?
I think we should, because it's kind of intimidating.
Hey, I told you, I don't mind good-looking guys or talented guys, but don't be good-looking and talented on this show. I'm telling you.
Good-looking and talented. Yeah.
Not good. Not good.
Good thing this is radio.
Our next guest, ladies and gentlemen, was directed by the wonderful Kay Cole, Broadway's Kay Cole, who many of you might remember, created the role of Maggie in A Chorus Line on Broadway.
She did.
However, I went back to her directing skills in No Strings and choreographed by her in City of Angels for Reprise Theater Company. He recently toured the country with the National Company of the Sound of Music as Herr Zeller at the Amundsen Theater. It played here in Los Angeles, and Captain Von Trapp at the Segerstrom Center for the Arts in Orange County.
That's right. The other national touring credits he touts include Peter and Simon in Jesus Christ Superstar and Tony in West Side Story. He appeared as the leading man in Musical of Musicals, the musical, both off-Broadway and around the country in its various regional premieres.
Locally, he starred in South Street at Pasadena Playhouse, Souvenir at the Gary Marshall Theater, End of the Rainbow at International City Theater, Merrily We Roll Along at the Wallace Annenberg and Actors Co-op, and Striking 12 at Laguna Playhouse and the Ensemble Theater Company of Santa Barbara.
That's right. His numerous screen appearances include Cold Case, Squaresville, and 13 Days with Kevin Costner.
He's here today to talk to us about his current starring role as Ronnie Reagan in A Booth at Chasen's. On stage now, as we've said, through November 25th at the El Portal Theater in the NoHo Arts District of North Hollywood. Please give it up for Brent Schindel.
That's right. Thank you. Yay. Thank you very much.
Kelly's clapping for him as well.
That was Kelly and her followers.
Fans everywhere. No, we put hers out and we brought yours
those
in.
Those are mine. I think mine were louder.
They don't applaud for anybody else.
We go to no expense.
That's right. Yeah, we don't spare any expense on that.
That's right.
Brent, I saw you in Merrily We Roll Along, where you were playing a supporting role there, but I thought your performance was fantastic. In fact, I commented on that. But not only that, that cast was amazing, right? That was Wayne Brady and some other people as well. But I mean, some really talented actors there. And at the Wallace Annenberg, which we love so much, is such a fun space to work in. Mm-hmm. That must have been a blast, yeah?
Yeah, and I love that show. That's a, it's a wonderful story. It's a challenging story. Yeah.
Well, now you said you met your bride doing that show as well.
That was at the Actors Co-op in Hollywood.
So you've got to have a little bit of a fondness for the show. It could be the worst show in the world. It's still got good feelings for you.
Yeah, exactly.
Which, of course, it's not. It's a fantastic piece.
When I proposed marriage to her, I actually played and sang at a piano. Not a Day Goes By, which is the love song from that show.
That's really
because it had that significance for
us. Well, exactly. I was not familiar with the show before. It's one of the lesser known works of Sondheim's canon. Yeah, yeah. But at the same time, I do think that it had story elements that we don't see in any other of his work. You know, the youth, a lot of youth in that I thought was really well played up. And just in general, I thought it was a fun piece. So if you get a chance to go see Merrily We Roll Along somewhere, it's a great piece to get
familiar
with.
Well, let me ask you one before we move on. You played the piano and mm-hmm. sang the song mm-hmm. and at the end of the song you ask her to marry you.
Yeah.
Which is great unless she says no and then it ruins that beautiful song.
Yeah.
Where was that?
That was at the Hotel Laguna in Laguna Beach, which is her hometown.
That's right.
And I managed to pull off the surprise where I had called the hotel ahead of time and said, can you leave that little grand piano in your lobby open? And so I took her down there. It was a couple days before Christmas, and we went to the lobby, and I said, oh, look over there. There's a piano. I wonder if it's open. And just started noodling on the piano and started singing that song. And at the end, I pulled this ring out of my pocket.
She had no idea.
She didn't know what it was for.
Well, we should give her a shout-out real quick. She's one of my favorite musical theater actresses in Southern California.
Erica Schindel.
She's been seen at amazing... Yeah. The audience loves her as well.
Oh, it was her fans all this time that
were
applauding.
They all came to talk one sentence about
Erica. The girls
stick
together. I told them to applaud for her.
Yeah.
Because she's great.
She is great. But not only that, you can see her at South Coast Repertory all the time, correct? Great roots down there and many shows around. But it's interesting to see. It must be hard to have a entertainment relationship and keep that going. And then it must be interesting to parallel that with the Reagans and go, hey, if they can do it and then make it through the White House still married,
exactly.
That's a pretty cool thing. So that's got to be an interesting perspective.
Absolutely.
So talented, handsome, and romantic, this
man. That's right. Yeah. And can play piano, which you have to pay extra for. Yeah. So pretty impressive. Yeah.
Good Lord.
There's obviously some interesting themes in this show, but can you tell us a little bit about where you grew up and what brought you to Los Angeles, how you ended up here to the show?
I'm a Southern Californian, actually. I'm from this area. So I went back east for college. I went to Dartmouth as an undergraduate and to Georgetown University.
So we got to add SMART to the list, too.
Yeah, we do.
Dartmouth is one of those schools can't get in just by signing up.
Yeah. And actually, in those years, I was studying government and foreign policy. That was actually where I thought. And I have this whole other thing that I won't go into where I might have been in the CIA by now because I was
I took the
Foreign Service exam and worked in the State Department. But I was acting the whole time.
Wow.
Even in the D.C. theater circuit. And so this is where I knew I had to end up.
And you eventually came to your senses and said, I need to get back to the arts.
I went to New York and got my training there mostly. But I came back to Southern California because this is where I feel at home.
Sure.
And but it is interesting. This also comes back. A lot of my Dartmouth classmates who have sort of found out through the grapevine that I'm doing this say, I knew that government major was going to come in handy.
Finally paying off.
Finally.
Now you can get a tax refund because it was all business research. It was all credit acting research. No doubt about
good
it.
Good thinking.
See, hey, any way that I can get out of my taxes, I'm right on it, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah,
as an actor, everything's a deduction. So
in your eyes.
And please, I'll tell you, these days, it's so funny, too. When I do my taxes, everything's 1099. So every independent contract, actor's taxes are immensely complicated.
I know.
But as a government man, you must have kind of a different perspective on that. You're going, hey, I know where this money's going, and this is all good stuff.
There was an interesting quote that I came across in a number of places in my research where Reagan was asked, kind of near the end of his tenure as the president of the United States, he sat down with someone who said, you know, you still get all this criticism that you're an actor in the highest office in the world.
Right.
And he said, you know, I have to be honest. And he says, I hesitate to say this, but I can't help myself. I've had so many times sitting here in the Oval Office in the White House thinking, how could you do this job if you hadn't been an actor?
Right.
And I think
that's interesting.
especially in, you know, we talk about JFK being the first president on television and how some of his success was attributed to how he looked better on television than Richard Nixon did.
Absolutely.
Who was his rival
certainly
at the time.
In the debates, yeah.
And I think ever since then, we've seen how you have to be president on television. And I think Ronald Reagan took that to a whole new level in terms of he knew how to be on television. He was called the great communicator. And his acting, and he probably isn't going to be looked at as the greatest actor in history. And even our show makes some comments about how maybe his acting skills might have been limited. Not that he was bad, but his range was limited, as so many movie stars might
be. I think
be.
There was even a campaign that somebody, I mean, during the campaign, someone said, he wasn't even that great of an actor. How well do you expect him to do as president? You
exactly.
know? So
oh, wow.
I thought that was interesting.
Exactly.
Obviously, the White House press room was opened up by Dwight Eisenhower, who was the first person to kind of, I think, let the people in and use the movie cameras live and let people kind of get an actual glimpse. Do you think that's been a positive change, or has that contributed somewhat to the kind of amusing ourselves to death mentality that we all have now, where it's 24/7 news, we see everything? And I mean, Reagan obviously mastered that. I think you can say that Clinton was a master at that as
right.
well.
I think so too.
But I mean, it's become such an important part of the job.
It's a two-edged sword. It's a good thing and it's a bad thing. It's like anything else, like technology or science or anything. It can be used for good, it can be used for bad. And we've seen both, evidence of both, I think.
No doubt, no doubt.
Well, you know, CNN is suing the president for his treatment of
Jim Acosta.
Yes. Oh, I heard that. Yeah.
And I really hope that they push it and it happens.
Interesting.
But you know he'll turn it around. And
I think there is, weren't they debating whether or not you can sue the president, whether or not because I mean, every president gets sued for something over time, but I think that there was a huge debate over some of these things where it was direct action. Is that something you can sue for, which is an interesting constitutional debate, obviously, on what is that office removed from
did
that everybody
else
is subject to.
Did you see the clip of that?
I did, yeah.
You know, what was disturbing was that White House aide, the apprentice, she... Poor thing. I mean, she didn't know how to act or what to do, but she came off pretty stupid in that clip. Don't you think? I think, wow, that girl, leave. Just leave.
I feel that State of the Art should be allowed to run a running commentary over every White House press conference from here on, with Michael just going, girl, leave the room. Get up and go.
She was between a rock and a hard place.
Man. Well, you got to tell me a little bit about what it's been like to kind of delve into this character who was an actor, who obviously was somebody who's known, his face was known to everybody on the planet. Mm-hmm. Is it hard to play a real person, certainly one that well known?
Yeah, I think that's the main thing that goes into playing a real person like this, and not just somebody who's a real person, but somebody that we all know from the media, from we've actually seen.
Much like Michael and myself.
Right.
We're very well known across the...
It'd be very difficult to impersonate you
across the desk
with accuracy.
You can play me after I'm long gone.
You guys can't go anywhere. I know. I mean, I talked about Daniel Day-Lewis playing Lincoln, and I thought in some ways he had an easier assignment, though, because we don't really know what Abraham Lincoln sounded like.
That's exactly right.
He did all his very thorough research, and I think that this is how his footfall was. But he kind of gets away with it because we don't really know. We can't check him against the tape. And
plus, he had 30 takes to get it how he wanted it. Yeah. You know, whereas you've got
and
to.
And they all called
him
Mr. President during lunch break or whatever the people
nice.
Had to
you
do.
Should do that.
I know. I need you to be more method in my.
It's not happening. Yeah. It's not going
to
happen.
I think even at home, right? I mean, you can just walk home and have your parents please refer to me as Mr. President from here on out, right? Everybody.
I tried that,
street.
But it's not taking much traction right now.
Tough to get that going.
I'll keep it going.
Although these days you might get more people to vote for you than anybody who's actually running for the White House. So you'll be in good shape.
Somebody's got to run.
That's right. Was it interesting to kind of step into Reagan's shoes and understand? I mean, he lived in a different time, but he had to be able to handle both. He had to handle people, but he also had to handle love and life and that sort of thing.
Right.
Was that a part of him that we don't see much of?
The way that this story is crafted in our show, In a Booth at Chasen's, you get the sense he's dealing with a lot of pressure at the Screen Actors Guild because he's very devoted to that. And I think that was one of the things I learned about him is that he believed in that. And I think a lot of his success later on when he ran for office, for the governorship, for the presidency, was because he really, like every successful politician, he really believed what he was saying. Right or wrong, he had conviction that this what he was engaged in was the right thing to do. And he threw himself into it 110%. And a lot of his commiserating with Nancy in our show is me kind of sort of pouring out my heart that this is going on and there's communists trying to infiltrate. And I think he, like a lot of his contemporaries, believed that communism was an evil. I mean, it's sort of like the you know, the Trumpism versus and meets ISIS, meets all the evil things that we think of in our current world. That's what the communist threat was.
And they were World War II guys who had seen it in action and knew that it was deadly if done wrong.
And we're knowing what the Stalinist regimes and the Red China things were just starting to do, exactly.
That's right.
And how people, just thousands and thousands of people were suffering under those totalitarian regimes.
Yep.
And the fact that that could come to our shores, I think, was a real threat.
Yeah.
You know, we can look back on it now and think, oh, that was a figment of their imagination. That was never going to happen. But you can't tell that to those people then. We, you know, they didn't know that then.
There's
and I
no
think
doubt.
He believed in that, and he thought he was fighting for the good. And I think that's really the key to this character, especially at this juncture of our story in 1949 through 1952. And he's only the head of the Screen Actors Guild at that point, but that's still a responsibility for a lot of people in the industry that he and Nancy both worked in.
Especially at that time, which was, you know, right after all the McCarthyism and all that sort of thing as well.
Right, and I make a passing reference in the show to Humphrey Bogart being pulled in front. This is Humphrey Bogart.
Right.
I mean, you don't get a bigger star than this.
Mm-hmm.
And Jimmy Cagney and Ida Lupino, I kind of reference these people. Like, these are not...
Ring Lardner.
We know them. They're not communists.
That's right. Yeah, you're right.
But that's how sort of fraught the atmosphere has become in Hollywood. And I say to Nancy, if these communists get control of Hollywood, they have their hands on the levers of power in the most powerful propaganda machine the world has ever known. There's
that
never been
true.
Anything like Hollywood
yep.
that disperses its material worldwide, and everybody right. sees these movies and
that's
is
a good
affected
point.
By them. So he feels a real sense of responsibility, and I think that's the key to his character.
Wow. Wow. Have you come to respect him more or less by getting to know him?
I think you have to respect any... When you play a character, mm-hmm. you have to make friends with it, whether you... You know, agree with it or not. When I played Stanley Kowalski in Streetcar Named Desire,
right.
you have to make friends with that guy. And there's some monstrous aspects to that character.
Yeah.
But you have to make friends with it. You have to find the empathy.
Yeah.
And there's so much to empathize with Ronald Reagan. You know, like I said, I think, and you can disagree with political decisions he made down the line, but the more I delve into it, you have to approach it like he thought he was doing the right thing at the right time. And I think Nancy shores him up at every turn and helps him to stay true to his moral compass and to stick to his guns, you know, whatever he's believing in and trying to pursue. So I gained so much empathy for him playing him in this thing.
Wow.
Because at the juncture of our show, he's kind of at a crossroads in his career. His movie star career for the very first time is slowing down. And all he's known is climbing up to this point. And all of a sudden, the offers are not coming so fast and furious. They're not... You know, the doors are closing for the first time instead of opening, and he's kind of having to wonder, what's next for me? And his private life has taken this huge crash because he's gotten divorced from Jane Wyman.
Yeah.
And he's got two young kids.
Right.
And what's next for me? It's for the first time he's not optimistic, and he's such an optimistic, sunny person. That's part of his political appeal.
Yeah.
He painted this sunny portrait of America for his for constituents. And that's the moment he meets Nancy.
Wow.
And that's the crux of our story in this show.
Amazing.
Do you feel, Brent, that the character that you have produced is now resting inside of you well at the place that you like?
Yeah, you mentioned the film I did, 13 Days, with Kevin Costner. It's a story about the Cuban Missile Crisis. And an actor named Bruce Greenwood, who's been in many, many films.
Of course.
Films.
In fact, I just saw him at the Carney Awards.
Yeah.
He's a great actor.
Wonderful actor.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He played JFK.
Yeah.
And he doesn't look very much like JFK.
No, not at all.
But you have to trust the wig people do their job like they do for me and for Kelly in our show and at Booth at Chasen's. And he adopted the you know, Boston accent, the Kennedy accent.
A little
accent,
bit of the mannerisms.
A little bit of the mannerisms.
Right.
And I do the same thing. I adopt some of the mannerisms and the vocal you know, speech patterns of Ronald Reagan. But then you just have to trust that the audience is going to go with it. For this next hour or two, we'll go with it. This is what Ronald Reagan is for this period. And you just, you have to trust at that, and people go with you.
And it's more about the essence of the human rather than it is the actual affectation of their speech.
And you
whatever.
Have to play the script that's in front of you.
That's
you have to play
point.
The story that they've been written. And that's kind of where Kelly and I live in this show. We play the story that's been written for us.
Yeah.
And just try to make that as truthful as possible.
Yeah.
And,
that's right.
And as human as possible. Like, we keep coming back to the fact these are real people. It's like, oh, they're not Mount Rushmore carved in stone. They're flesh and blood, and they struggle, and they, you know, they make mistakes, and, you know, they adore each other, and yet they sometimes, you know, mistreat each other by accident and have to apologize and, you know. call a truce.
In our world of 44 character knowledge, you know, where it's like, okay, I got this off of Twitter, so this is who that person is. It's probably important to remember that. And whenever we villainize somebody or whenever we think somebody's the greatest in the world, knowing that they're a person and they have ups and they have downs, failures and successes.
Right.
And that's really the essence of humanity as well.
One thing that I love about Reagan, and fill in my blanks, but I think this was a man that had conviction and had a lot of beliefs and morals, and that he just kind of fell into these leadership roles because when he was first appointed as SAG president, it was to take over the role from somebody. So he didn't even run. They just were like, you should do it. And he's
very interesting.
And he's the kind of guy that like just takes on the role because if somebody believes in him, he's going to do the best job he can.
Yeah.
And then from there, he was then elected again and again after he ran. And the same thing in politics, I think.
Mm-hmm.
The Republican Party stepped forward and were like, you should run. And he's like, well, I don't know. And he went and like looked around and went to a bunch of political events and then came back to Nancy and was like, they're right. I'm the one that needs to do this.
Wow.
And I think it wasn't necessarily that Ronald sought it out. It's that it found him because he was a person of conviction and he really, truly believed.
Yeah. I don't think he was as ambitious as Nancy.
He was not as ambitious as Nancy. The thing about Nancy is she sees all this in him and she's like, you could be the biggest star in the world. Because at that time...
She says that? Is that a line from the show?
Yeah,
that's a cool show. That's a cool line.
which he resists because he says, it's not about being a star.
Right.
It's about doing the right thing.
But she's going, you can do both.
Yeah, you can do both.
Very cool. As she always says, she's like, I married an actor. I didn't marry a politician, so she's thinking, how do I make these wonderful characteristics work for him and make him become what he wanted to be? She always said if he sold shoes for a living, she would be out on the street selling the shoes, too. Like, she just supported this man because... And that gaze that she had, that was because she truly believed in him and everything that he said.
Fascinating.
Yeah. We should all be so lucky.
Right.
That's right. Well, the name of the show is In a Booth at Chasen. It's at Chasen's. It's currently on stage at the El Portal Theater, running all the way through November 25th.
That's right. And for tickets, ladies and gentlemen, as we've said earlier, you can go to the website for the show, which is inabooth@chasens.com, or you can call 818-508-4200. And they're very affordable, from as little as 29 to, you know, the best seating in the house at 65 plus premium.
And now, embarrassing moments.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
Brent's getting up and leaving. He's done. He says, I'm not doing this.
Where do my fans go? Where are those applauding people?
They're all waiting
now.
They're
not applauding now.
Bated breath.
Waiting for their paycheck.
That's right. We start off friendly, but we end with the embarrassing moments. Do either of you have a moment that happened, something that was embarrassing, maybe on a film set or live performance, that maybe you thought you couldn't get through, but you found out the truth in the adage, the show must go on?
Have we just sprung this upon them? You didn't tell them
about it? I got to admit, with everything that's been going on in my life, I may have forgotten one. Kelly knew. Kelly was aware.
I forgot that.
I just assumed she'd tell
that
Brent.
That was a thing that happened at the end of the show.
I just assumed she'd tell Brent.
I'm trying to come up with something new.
I'll come up with something. I mean, there's so many things in my life.
Do my job for me, Kelly, please.
Ladies first.
I'm trying to think if I can come up with something different that I haven't said on the show before.
Yeah, see, you should have started making lists after you left because we knew we were going to have you back on again.
Okay, how about... So. The World Goes Round, which I just did with Will Freeze 2.0. I have a wonderful ability of falling on stage. not even really helped by anything other than my grace. My own 2 feet, exactly. My director for that, Richard Israel, came to the opening of Chasen's and was very disappointed I did not fall down.
just wait, Richard.
But
just wait.
I don't even know. I fell a lot. How about that? Literally, my favorite moment was I sang a song called "How Lucky Can You Get," which is from Funny Girl.
So famous, yeah.
Funny Lady. Excuse me.
Right.
Pardon me. And
it's after she grew up.
Exactly. And it's this one moment in the show where everybody has finally left stage, and it's the first time that somebody is completely alone on stage. And I even, like, address the empty tables, and I'm there, and I start to sing her big part, like, hey there, gorgeous! And I'm stomping across the stage all, like, sassy and diva, and the heel of my shoe had been worn down on the side, and I'm just stomping pumping it out, and I hit the side and alone, completely alone on stage, walking, fell on my face.
Oh, my.
But I like how you had to pick which time you fell during the run of the show.
Completely
that's
alone.
Our first embarrassing moments that's been the entire run of a
exactly.
show.
That was it. Also, something I had done on the cruise ship is I fell completely alone on stage. Nobody else is on stage. And I'm
nobody to blame it on.
Scooter, and
kind
I
of your
just,
signature
I
go-to
fly,
thing.
I fall.
She hasn't fallen
cast
on State
me,
of the Arts, so
I'll
we're not fully
you.
Indoctrinated yet. Brent, what you got for us?
Yeah, we just opened the run, so I'm waiting for
get,
these falls.
Uh-oh.
He's going to push you once. Be careful.
I'll be ready to catch her. Let's see. This is a kind of a crazy story that I like to harken back to. When I was doing the national tour of West Side Story, our guy playing Bernardo, if you know West Side Story, the opening prologue sequence, the Jets and the Sharks are circling around and whatever, and our poor Bernardo jumped off a fence and ruptured his ACL. Horrible
oh,
injury.
No.
And I'm playing Tony, so I'm coming under the next scene where he sings Something's Coming. And I go out there, and I'm kind of aware that our guy has been injured. And his understudy is the guy who plays Chino, who's kind of like the lieutenant, the shy guy who's, you know, Maria's suitor. And so I go out there, I do this Something's Coming scene, and I come off of Something's Coming, and I'm doing my quick change to go to the dance at the gym, and I'm kind of trying to ask the dressers and whoever else is backstage, what's the story with Enrique? Is he okay? How's Bernardo? And they're saying, well, he's really hurt. He can't dance, but he's going to stay playing Bernardo, but he can't do the dance at the gym. He's going to, you know, just be there standing
wow.
around.
That's
so that's the last I hear.
To keep going. That's amazing.
So I'm like, okay, more power to him.
Right.
So I go on, and I do the dance at the gym sequence. I spot Maria, and we do our slow walk to the center of the stage. Everything goes away. We do our little cha-cha, you know, and my hands are cold, so warm, and all the lines or whatever, and we meet in a kiss. And what's supposed to happen is the world is supposed to come roaring back. Bernardo shoves me away and says, go home, American. And I say, slow down, Bernardo.
Right.
Well, I get my kiss with Maria, and I get shoved away, and I open my eyes, and it's the guy playing Chino who has shoved me away. And he goes, go home, American. And I say, slow down, Chino, question mark.
My friend from the other gang.
Chino. And he's looking at me with big eyes, shaking his head.
I'm Bernardo.
So apparently, yeah, Bernardo.
Name tags, man. Yeah. Come on.
So this poor guy was, so that was kind of an egg on the face moment. Like, who are
no
you?
Kidding.
Because he, in the middle of Dance of the Gym, the Bernardo guy had said, I can't continue. I'm in agony. In pain or whatever, so he taps Chino. You're on, but I don't know this. I'm in the middle of my love throws, and
wow,
yeah, so
amazing.
And the Rumble scene was kind of interesting with this poor Chino guy having to do the knife fight and everything.
Oh,
really?
Well, those are
my
great.
My character's Nancy in the show. I don't think I'll ever be Bernardo. So you don't have to worry about that.
We want to give a huge thank you to Kelly and
absolutely,
Brent. Thank
guys.
You guys both for being here.
There they are.
Hey there.
Yeah,
we didn't even fall down.
The name of the show is In a Booth at Chasen's at the El Portal Theater. It's inabooth@chasens.com. Go check it out. Get tickets and go see that show.
Now through the 25th of November. So we always say on this program, get up off the couch, put the remote down, get away from that TV, take your children.
Yep.
And
see
this
us
is
live.
Yes.
Mm.
The name of the book we mentioned was The President Will See You Now by Peggy Grand. And, of course, The Bench, A Love Story, is also on play with Hudson Stages. And if you want to donate to Fire Relief, Ventura County Community Foundation and United Way of Ventura County are taking good care of the people up there. Michael, where do I see you next week?
How about on the radio?
Yeah.
You're listening to State of the Arts with Michael Sterling and Andrew David James, only on LA Talk Radio.